It's Wednesday, September 10th, 2008, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Well, good evening, dear Stashers. Yet another late post from me tonight. I've just been so busy trying to collect all of that media from Hemp Fest, the Democratic National Convention, and the Portland Hemp Stock. So still cranking out the video and the audio and as much of the podcast as I can. Speaking of the video and audio from Hemp Stock, I'm going to bringing you tonight the keynote address from Normal founder Keith Stropp at the Portland Hemp Stock this last weekend. And, of course, it is Cannabis Science Day, so we'll be visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine talking about cannabis as an antibiotic. You've seen that story about how pot could fight MRSA and advanced tuberculosis that don't respond to regular antibiotics. So Dr. Mitch and I will cover that. And of course, we've got our hemp headlines for you. So all right, everybody, let's get to it. Sit back and relax. Load up a hookah. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Fresno County to begin issuing medicinal marijuana cards. From KMPH Fox 26. The County Board of Supervisors voted on Tuesday to begin issuing medicinal marijuana cards before the end of the year. After a 3-1 vote, Fresno County will now become the 41st county in the state to participate in California's Medical Marijuana Program Registry. The Board of Supervisors reached the decision after several discussions and years of research. While marijuana use is against federal law, back in 1996, California legislatures passed the Compassionate Use Act, which allows patients with a valid doctor's recommendation and their designated primary caregivers to possess and cultivate marijuana for personal medical use. In 2003, the Identification Card Law was added in hopes of protecting medical marijuana patients and caregivers from being put under arrest. The health department believes more than 500 residents will sign up for the card this year. Kudos to Fresno County for following the will of the people. San Diego and San Bernardino counties continue to fight against the ID card system in the courts under the mistaken belief that the ID cards violate federal law, despite decisions we've had confirming the opposite. ID cards will make the system much easier to deal with for both patients and law enforcement. What if Governor Palin had been arrested for marijuana? Commentary by Bill Piper on thehuffingtonpost.com. Senator John McCain's running mate, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, has admitted she smoked marijuana in the past, but says it's not an issue because it was legal under Alaska law. She says, though, that marijuana should be illegal, so what she did should have been a crime, and she should be considered a criminal. But it wasn't, and she's not, so it's not an issue. That's a more convoluted obfuscation than former President Clinton's admission that he smoked marijuana, but didn't inhale. While possession of small amounts of marijuana for personal use is legal in Alaska, it's still illegal under federal law. That makes Governor Palin a criminal in the eyes of the federal government. Does she think she should be sent to federal prison? Or should states be allowed to set their own marijuana policies and the feds should butt out? 18 states have marijuana policies at odds with federal law. And what about the many law-abiding, tax-paying Alaskans who currently smoke marijuana? If marijuana is recriminalized in Alaska, like she proposes, many of these citizens will face arrest and lifelong criminal records. Had Governor Palin been arrested for marijuana, it is doubtful she would be running for vice president now. In her heart of hearts, does Governor Palin really think that people who smoke marijuana belong in jail and not the governor's mansion or the White House? Yes. Cannabis linked to earlier psychosis onset. From Reuters Health. Researchers from Spain have found a strong and independent link between cannabis use and the onset of psychosis at a younger age. The association, they say, cannot be explained by chance, and it is not related to gender or the use of other drugs. It is, however, related to the amount of cannabis used. The researchers report that, quote, estimates of the attributable risk suggest that the use of cannabis accounts for about 10% of the cases of psychosis, end quote. The findings are based on 131 patients aged 15 to 65 years who needed inpatient care for a first psychotic episode during a two-year period. The subjects were evaluated using the Structured Clinical Interview for DSM-4 Axis 1 disorders, and clinical and demographic data were also collected. The results showed a significant gradual reduction in the age at which psychosis began that correlated with an increased dependence on cannabis. Compared with non-users, age at onset was reduced by 7, 8.5, and 12 years among users, abusers, and dependents, respectively, the researchers report. In further analysis, the effect of cannabis on age at onset, quote, was not explained by the use of other drugs or gender, end quote, they also note. The finding was similar in the youngest patients, suggesting that this effect was not due to chance. These results, quote, point to cannabis as a dangerous drug in young people at risk of developing psychosis, end quote, the authors conclude. We at Normal have long argued for removing penalties for the responsible adult use of cannabis. We have also advocated against the non-medical use of cannabis by children and teens. That said, potential risk of psychosis for a small subset of young people does not mean we need to be locking up adults for using cannabis. Researchers estimate that about 1% of the population suffers from schizophrenia, and only 6.7% of all young people between 12 and 17 have used marijuana in the past month, so we are really talking about very few possible cases here. That's not to say that kids at risk for psychosis using marijuana isn't something to worry about, but we should keep the problem in perspective when millions more adults are using marijuana safely and without incident. Chicago cop charged with aiding in drug frame job by man against wife. From the Chicago Tribune. A Crystal Lake man didn't like his wife's parenting skills or her spending habits, and that's why he got a Chicago police officer to help him frame her with drugs and a gun, Cook County prosecutors said. The prosecutors said the man gave them another reason, too. He wanted her money. Bogdan Mazur, who is in the midst of a divorce, tried to set up his estranged wife by planting cocaine, marijuana, and a gun in her vehicle in April 2007 and having Grand Central District Officer Slavomir Pliva arrest her, according to Assistant State's Attorney Lynn McCarthy. Pliva, age 30, was arrested Monday and charged with official misconduct, perjury, obstruction of justice, unlawful restraint, and false reporting. On April 1, 2007, Mazur met with several police officers, including Pliva, at a parking garage near Belmont and Central Avenues, McCarthy said. There, Mazur told the officers he was certain drugs were in his wife's vehicle. Mazur then called his wife in the officer's presence and told her his car wouldn't start and she needed to come pick up their two young children, who were with him, McCarthy said. Mazur and the uncharged co-conspirator had put a .22 caliber pistol, cocaine, and cannabis in the spare tire compartment, McCarthy said. When the woman arrived, Pliva stopped her and asked if he could search her vehicle, McCarthy said. She said yes. Police found the plastic bag, which contained 44.5 grams of cocaine, 62 grams of cannabis, and a gun, McCarthy said. The woman was arrested and charged with gun and drug offenses. Chicago police said Pleva was the subject of an internal investigation that resulted in his arrest. He was the third officer arrested this year based on an internal investigation. Deputy Superintendent Peter Brust said in a statement, quote, "The actions of this officer do not represent the vast majority of honorable, hardworking police officers who risk their lives every day," end quote. In 2006, Pleva was sued in federal court by a mentally handicapped man who claimed that the officer and others pulled him from a parked vehicle, beat him, and dragged him in the street. In March 2007, the city settled the suit for $50,000. How many drug war POWs are sitting in a prison right now because of the actions of a crooked cop planting drugs went undetected by the victim and unreviewed by police? This is one of the forgotten aspects of the war on drugs, is that it provides easy money for crooked cops who steal evidence and sell it, and an easy frame job for crooked cops who plant evidence on unsuspecting citizens.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. All right, everybody, open up and say ah, because it's time for some more cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Associate Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. And Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be on the show.
You know, we talk a lot about the media and how they portray cannabis and how whenever there's a bad story about cannabis, it's going to fly all over the media. We see these stupid things in the UK media about the super skunk. And here in America, there's the, you know, pot is 4 times, 10 times more potent. But whenever there's a good story, it, you know, usually falls through the cracks. We don't hear a lot about it. That's why I wanted to bring up this story to you. This one just got some play in the New York Times and WebMD, and it has to do with Italian and British studies on the use of marijuana compounds as an antibacterial, and I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that study.
It's an amazing study, really, Russ. I got a huge kick out of this. We've had some suspicions about marijuana and the cannabinoids battling bacteria going long before people really even understood what bacteria was. Occasionally I mention the Emperor Shenang from 2737 BC. He was probably a mythical character, but he gets credit for discovering the sacred plant Cannabis sativa, and he prescribed it for things that were probably related to microbes and bacteria back then, but of course nobody really knew what the hell microbes were back then. In 1959 and 60, we had some papers published suggesting that THC in particular could battle bacteria, and it just didn't make much sense to folks. It didn't follow the mechanisms we understood at the time. Now, because bacteria are getting more and more resistant to the drugs we do have, so that, you know, anytime you take an antibiotic, you sort of have to weigh the pros and cons of educating this microbe of some sort so that it essentially becomes resistant to this thing. We really need new drugs to battle these bacteria. Well, this study was really thorough and interesting and looked at a number of different cannabinoids, including the three big ones that we talk about a lot here, THC, cannabidiol, and cannabinol, expecting that, you know, one or the other of them might be a good way to battle some bacteria or microbes. And it turned out all of them did, which was a bit of a surprise. And they seem to go through a mechanism that's different from our standard ways of fighting bacteria, which means it may be really, really helpful for these strains that seem to be resistant to the drugs we have now.
Yeah, they had mentioned something about the plant antibacterials being of a different type than the typical, you know, bacterial antibacterials that we use, and that it would be harder for the superbugs to resist them then.
Well, and again, I feel like the what this reveals about the way, you know, the human organism works, the way animals work, but also the way these little, you know, unicellular organisms respond to cannabinoids is an intriguing statement about how, you know, the cannabinoid receptor is throughout the animal kingdom, and something that's clearly an interesting phenomenon of design or evolution, depending on how you look at it, and that the cannabis plant seems to interact with this in intriguing ways, and the fact that they've sort of co-evolved is a wonderful story. When you look back even a few millennia.
And the other thing they had pointed out here is that there was some promise in these compounds of being able to use non-psychoactive compounds. You had mentioned the cannabidiol and the cannabinol. A couple others that were mentioned here were cannabichromine and cannabigerol. I hope I pronounced those correctly. And so we're looking forward to possibly even having, you know, topical remedies here that a person could use that didn't want to experience any of the psychoactive effects of the THC.
And that's really the beauty of it is, I mean, except at some really insane doses, both cannabidiol and cannabinol are pretty tough to get any psychoactive effects. And even when they do, it's usually just a mild decrease in anxiety or a little bit of sedation. And, of course, topically, they really don't produce any kind of psychoactive effect at all. So this seems like a very fruitful route for drug companies and folks like that to pursue. And what a wonderful goal. Here's a thing that we can all get behind, and that's decreasing, you know, exposure to bacteria. I certainly hope that the opportunity to experiment with alternative strains and alternative sources of all these different cannabinoids doesn't get blocked, because, you know, here's really a wonderful potential to have an amazing amount of good really soon. This isn't some, you know, future horror that we're going to avoid. We're already in a situation where there are enough drug-resistant bacteria out there that we really have to worry, and I think jumping on this kind of work would be a credit to our science and an intriguing credit to the plant.
Yeah, and you know, we can't overestimate how important this could be. You know, maybe a lot of people haven't heard of these things. I have a wife who works in the health industry, so I've heard of these things like this MRSA bug, which, you know, according to that New York Times article, they talk about how MRSA is responsible for more deaths in the United States than AIDS every year. So this is some serious stuff that could benefit greatly from the use of the cannabis plant. And one thing I wanted to get your opinion on here, too, is reading back through one of these articles that said that the preparations of cannabis were investigated back in the 50s as topical antiseptic agents. But then, of course, after that, you know, we get the 1960s rolling around and the whole anti-drug, anti-marijuana campaigns. Can you imagine how far ahead we'd be in these preparations and these medical uses of cannabis had the research been allowed to go forward, you know, past the 1950s?
Oh, and it's sad when you look, the very last paper published on that topic was in 1960, and then they were sort of relegated to these Eastern European countries that really didn't have the resources, particularly back then, to pursue this the way it could have been pursued. And, I mean, the notion that, you know, cannabis prohibition may have contributed to that just really makes me want to weep, because here was an opportunity to save not only folks who were using cannabis, but even folks staying in the vicinity, folks who are going to get exposed to these bacteria through, you know, staying in the same hospital or living in the same house or something along those lines, who really could have benefited had we been able to take literally a few decades of a jump on this kind of thing. But I'm really optimistic about the current labs that are approaching this problem, and I think we can turn this into some amazing medicine. in a relatively quick time.
You know, you had mentioned the historical background of using marijuana preparations as topical agents, you know, the Chinese background. I remember speaking to, I can't remember exactly who it was, but someone who's really involved in the religious aspects of cannabis. And he was speaking to me about how in the ancient Hebrew traditions, they would use this anointing oil, and they believed that this anointing oil was prepared a lot with, you know, tops of cannabis, or what they called cannabossum, and how this may have been the idea behind the healing that happened in their belief system there, the healing of the lepers and such may have had something to do with preparations of cannabis. Is there any sort of, I guess I wanted to ask, is there any sort of historical proof of that in places other than the Chinese that you were talking about?
Yeah, in fact, the ancient Romans and ancient Greeks seem to have prescribed cannabis medicinally, and again, as a topical agent for disorders that, you know, may not have been known at the time as bacterial, but not just rheumatism and things like that, but other things that were complications or infections that seemed to respond fairly well to this. Pliny the Tiny is sort of the joke of people say, but Pliny the Elder had a big pharmacopoeia that listed cannabis as one of these things. Also, some of the veterinary stuff back in the ancient Romans, and as you can imagine, a big cavalry like that really depended upon good medication for their horses, used this pretty liberally and focused on tops and seeds in an effort to get as many different cannabinoids as possible into a salve that they used on any injuries that their horses actually experienced.
Wow, that's just remarkable. And you know, looking forward to where we go from here, and I would think that medical professionals would be, you know, really excited about this possibility and want to move forward with it. But of course, we have all the roadblocks they would have to get through to be able to do something like that here in the United States. What could they do? What could we do to exert some pressure on, I don't know, FDA or NIDA or any of these groups to move forward with the study of cannabis as a antiseptic agent like this?
I think the key may be at the molecular level of saying, okay, look, we're not going to focus on THC, even though it may be one of the more promising ones. Let's look at cannabidiol and see, you know, can we just experiment with this one? It is not one that is psychoactive, certainly not when administered topically, and it doesn't lend itself to some kind of easy conversion into a psychoactive drug. And then giving folks the opportunity to, you know, test that for safety, well, it's amazingly safe. We've had, you know, literally, depending on who you ask, 5 millennia of safe use of, you know, a plant that contains that among a whole bunch of things. And at extremely high doses, it's not at all toxic to animals. So here's our chance to really play with this. And we've already got, you know, pretty compelling proof here in the lab as far as just, you know, how things function in a petri dish. Can we go ahead and start the animal trials and even work into human trials on these kinds of things with what would be actually a rather modest amount of funding given the availability of this particular cannabinoid? And the willingness right now, you know, as anybody who's in hospitals knows, we really do need anything that's going to help prevent folks from getting contact with bacterial problems while they're in the hospital. And this could really pay off in the long run, improve relations with folks as part of medicine, and you know, just help people be reassured that they're not going to contract some intractable bacterial infection while they're staying in for procedures, even those that are relatively minor.
Mm. Well, maybe as we get past November and the elections and we get a different political climate, we'll have a better atmosphere to move forward with this. I think it'd be something that is easy enough for the public to understand. And like you say, take the tack on working on the agents that aren't psychoactive to allay the general public's fears of, you know, again, the whole idea of people getting high, which I think it's kind of sad to me to think that people would restrict the advance of science and the savings of lives just because they are afraid of a few people getting high, but I guess that's the world we live in.
Well, here's hoping that things get better.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Mitch, for joining us again here on our Cannabis Science Day.
Thanks for having me.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our Daily Audio Stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Hey everybody, time for our musical break, and whoops! Seems like last week on Friday when I did my interview with John E. from OPM, I forgot to post anything to the blog about that. So, sorry guys, John E. and all the guys at OPM, that was a great song from last Friday. And to make up for it, I'm going to play another song from this great album called Golden State of Mind. Now, OPM stands for Opening People's Minds, and Johnny and the gang rock the house with some tight rhymes and eclectic loops. Big B, Johnny Richter, and others from the Suburban Noise Stable are featured on the record, but this next song, Addicted, is all OPM all the way. The new album from OPM is available at their website, opmden.com, and at iTunes, and it is called Golden State of Mind. I'm in a golden state of mind right now. Acapulco gold, that is. I can't give you any free MP3 downloads of these tunes, so you'll just have to enjoy them within your daily audio stash. So here we go. This next song is Addicted from OPM.
Straight up to pleasure, by the path of together we chase. St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML. We are the oldest, largest, and best-known marijuana law reform organization in America, and it's all because of your support. Take some time to join NORML at www.norml.org. Your membership supports this podcast, our websites, our policy research and analysis, and our annual conferences. Changing marijuana laws is a grassroots effort, and it starts with you, the stakeholder. Join NORML today and add your voice to the millions of cannabis consumers who demand equality with our beer-drinking friends.
This last weekend was Hempstock number 4 in Portland, Oregon at the East Bank Esplanade, and it featured NORML founder and legal counsel Keith Straup, who flew across the country to join us and give the keynote address. He's introduced by Madeline Martinez, a board member of NORML and the executive director of Oregon NORML, who herself is introduced by Paul Stanford from the Campaign for the Restoration and Regulation of Hemp. Enjoy this audio from Hempstock 2008.
Laws. Ms. Madeline Martinez.
Of National NORML. As I like to call him, Papa NORML. Keith Straup, the founder of NORML, and here he is.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I'm a 64-year-old lawyer. I first smoked marijuana 43 years ago when I was a freshman at Georgetown Law School in Washington, D.C. I've been a regular smoker ever since, and I'm here to tell you there's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults, and it should be none of the government's business, period. It is time we stopped arresting and started respecting marijuana smokers in America. As Madeline said, my name is Keith Straup. Back in 1970, I founded NORML. I ran it as executive director for a couple of decades, and I currently serve as legal counsel. I hope you know, but if you don't, NORML is the marijuana smokers' lobby in America. We represent the interests of marijuana smokers. We're not ashamed of it. We're proud of it. We support the elimination of all penalties for the possession and use of marijuana by adults. No $100 fines, no nothing. It should be perfectly legal. We also support the right of consumers to grow their own marijuana because, in fact, if the government gets to a point where they offer marijuana it's too weak or they want to charge us too much, the hell with them. We will grow our own. We do a good job of it now. Favor the establishment of a legally regulated market where consumers can buy their marijuana in a safe and secure environment. Something like OCTA 2010 that's being proposed in Oregon.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a marijuana smoker, it is time for you to get up, stand up, light up, and let the world know how you feel. We cannot win our rights until we come out of the closet. I'll be honest with you, I think we all recognize that marijuana is a lot of fun. It improves the taste of food. It improves the enjoyment of music. And it improves the appreciation of sex. I think we all know that. But for many of us, millions of us, it does more than that. It helps us get in a different mindset where we feel a certain affinity and appreciation for our fellow man. Marijuana smoking in the right setting can be a very positive and enriching experience, and we need to learn the courage to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Now, we need to come out of the closet for a couple of other reasons. Just as the gay and lesbian communities learned they could not win their freedom until large numbers of courageous individuals were willing to come out of the closet and overcome those negative stereotypes, we suffer from the same problem. We have to come out of the closet so we're more visible, so we overcome negative stereotype of marijuana smokers. We also have to be more visible so our elected officials know we exist. There are surveys showing 47% of the entire adult population has smoked marijuana at some time in their lives. That's one out of two. That survey was taken 5 years ago. What that means is today there are more living Americans who have smoked marijuana than who have not. It's a tipping point. So, come out of the closet, and number two, take the pledge. I will never again vote for a candidate for office who wants to treat me like a criminal. Those 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana in the last year, within a couple of election cycles, we can legalize marijuana if we simply quit voting for people who want to treat us like criminals. Now, real quickly, the bad news. There were 830,000 Americans arrested last year. 88% of those arrests were for civil possession. They were just marijuana smokers. There's another marijuana smoker arrested every 38 seconds in America. 47% of all drug arrests in this country are marijuana arrests. There are more marijuana arrests than there are for all the violent crimes combined. Folks, it is time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers. Now, real quick, some of the good news. Well, we have surveys showing that 80% of the public now support the medical use of marijuana. But more surprisingly, 76% of the public, 3 out of 4, say a fine only for a marijuana smoker, not just medical users, for all the rest of us. Now, that's not perfect. I don't think they should be able to fine us unless we're smoking in public. If we're smoking in private, it's none of their damn business. But think about it. 3 out of 4 Americans now agree with us that marijuana smoking should not be a crime. We have largely won the hearts and minds of the American people, and that's significant. Now, our challenge is, how do we get from that public support to public policy? And frankly, our elected officials have been incredibly timid, as you know. So, that's why you got to come out of the closet. That's why you got to vote. That's why you've got to contact your elected official and let them know this issue is important to you. But together, we can turn this around. What we need to keep in mind is 30,000 people die every year from the abuse of alcohol. I don't mean wrecks on the highway. I just mean overdrinking. 430,000 people die every year from tobacco smoking, yet both of those are legal. No one has ever died in the history of mankind from smoking marijuana, and we had an expert testify at a federal hearing a few years ago that in order to ingest a fatal dose of THC, you would have to eat 1,600 pounds of marijuana at one time. Now, I got some friends who have tried, but nobody has done it yet. So, come on, let's get real. Marijuana is a relatively harmless drug when used responsibly. So where does that leave us? Well, I think it leaves us, we're making progress. It's sure, it's steady, it's not as fast as we would have liked. I'm not sure I'll live long enough to see legal marijuana, but you folks will. I'm convinced of that. It also means we're going to look back on our own history and we're going to be embarrassed by the numbers of people's lives we destroyed for no good reason. So let's just make the bond today that says, together, we're going to turn this around. We're going to demonstrate to America that marijuana smokers are good citizens. We raise kids. We pay taxes. We contribute in a positive way to our communities. It's time to stop arresting marijuana smokers. Support Oregon Normal. Support OCTA 2010. And let's finally legalize marijuana in America. Thank you.
Give it up for Mr. Keith Strzok. Keith Strzok, the founder of Normal, freedom fighter for going on 40 years almost.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. This one comes from the great emancipator himself, Abraham Lincoln, who once said, quote, "Prohibition will work great injury to the cause of temperance. It is a species of intemperance within itself, for it goes beyond the bounds of reason in that it attempts to control a man's appetite by legislation and makes a crime out of things that are not crimes. A prohibition law strikes a blow at the very principles upon which our government was founded." End quote. Now, he was talking about alcohol prohibition, but marijuana prohibition falls into the same camp. It's time to enlist in the fight against adult marijuana prohibition. You can enlist by registering to vote and making your voice heard to your elected officials. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, and we'll be back tomorrow fighting against adult marijuana prohibition through education and the growing truth about cannabis. Until that time, take care of each other, tokers.